Welcome to Code Words, a podcast for developers by developers. Join us for an informal coffee chat with code newbies, senior engineers, and more. Wherever you are on your unique coding journey, we've got you covered.
Hi, I hope I find you well. It's me, Rob, and welcome back to another episode of Code Words. My ambition is to go from code newbie to front-end web developer while exploring unique coding stories from people all over the world. My guest on the program today is a software developer, a free code camp tutor, and a YouTuber with a passion for helping you learn to code by building JavaScript games. It's Anya Kubo. Anya, how are you doing?
Hey, thank you so much for having me on here. I am really good, thank you. Currently coming to you from Dubai, where I'm trying to become a digital nomad of some sorts and just escape cold London. So yes, that's where
fantastic.
I am at the moment.
Yeah. We'll start with some icebreakers. Are you more of a beach day kind of person, or are you an urban explorer?
So I would definitely say I have to be a beach day sort of person, but it depends what day you get me on. Recently, I've definitely been a beach person, purely because, again, I think I just wanted to escape the cold weather. So that would be my answer. I'm not saying that the urban explorer bit doesn't grab my attention too.
That was kind of a loaded question. I saw your post the other day, I think it was. You posted a picture of the beach and it was like, yeah, I want to be there, but no, I'm in cold England at the moment. The dark nights are really here now. They're here. So, So the next question, tea or coffee?
So I would have to say tea. I'm trying to cut out the decaf just purely because I know me, and if I drink too much caffeine, I'm literally awake till like 2 a.m. and then, you know, no one wants that, right? No one wants to stay up till 2 a.m. and then wake up late and then just feel the whole morning's gone. So I'm trying to drink way more decaffeinated things, and that includes chamomile tea.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah. I like an array of teas.
What's your favorite tea?
My favorite tea is probably a green tea. It's quite boring, but I like a green tea. Or a peppermint tea.
Peppermint over green, actually.
Yeah, I like how refreshing it is. Earl Grey as well, if I'm feeling that in the afternoon, but you never know. If you could join a band, who would it be?
Oh, like a musical band.
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't know. That's a hard one. Probably, actually, what is Red Hot Chili Peppers? Let's go with that one.
Good shout. Do you see yourself on the drums, on bass or anything, or are you going to be the lead vocalist?
I mean, I'd like to be the lead vocalist purely because I can't sing at all. So and I've always wanted to. I'm always so jealous when people can get up there and sing and, you know, not sound like a cat's dying. So I would go with the lead vocalist.
Oh, so you've heard my demos, yeah. The next question. This is based on some of the games I've seen. I think I know the answer to this, but it's Mario or Sonic?
Well, it'll have to be Mario. I actually would have said Mario anyway, not just because I actually made the game. I really didn't play that much Sonic. I know they sort of came out at the same time, but yeah, Mario. And now obviously Mario's just expanded. I was playing Mario Golf the other day. So that would be my choice. How about you?
Oh, Mario all the way. The first console I had, I'm going to show my age now, it was a Nintendo Entertainment System back in the day when there were no save points. Like, people don't know how lucky they are nowadays. Like, if you died, you had to do the whole level all over again.
The whole thing, exactly.
Yeah. Mario for me all the way. I do like Mario Odyssey as well. That's really good.
I don't think I played that one.
That's a good one. Sonic wasn't really for me. If anything, it was a bit too fast. It's like, slow down so I can see the scenery.
Yeah.
Talking of things to look at, can you describe your setup for us? What do you have on your desk?
Okay, so at the moment, because I am doing the whole digital nomad thing, it's pretty bare, which has been okay. For filming stuff, it hasn't been so great, to be fair. I do miss my setup at home, which is, you know, double screens. I have some padding on the wall for extra, I don't even know the word, where sound gets absorbed.
Soundproofing, yeah, I got you.
Soundproofing, that's the least professional. You know, the sound thing. Sound absorption panels, and I've got lighting. I've got like 3-point lighting going on. So I do miss that. The end product is definitely something that is much better than what I'm doing now, because currently I'm literally just sitting at a table with a laptop. So that's my setup.
So are you in a cafe? Are you in an Airbnb or something?
So I'm actually renting off a friend. I'm renting their flat. So I'm in the Airbnb flat at the moment.
Oh, nice. Yeah. So you've already answered this question, but I was going to say you're born in Poland, raised in the UAE, and you've lived in Singapore and London. And where do you go home at the moment? So I guess that's Dubai at the moment.
To Dubai, I would always, I think, consider my home. I think purely because this is where I went to school and I grew up, as in from the ages of like 1 to 18. So for those reasons, I would say that this is my home. But I haven't lived here for so long now that it gets a bit confusing. And there's a word for it as well. I think someone told me like third culture kids. It's where children grow up in a culture that isn't their parents. So yes, I completely forgot to mention the Polish part. I am 100% Polish. I did one of those DNA tests.
Oh, did you?
You know, 23andMe, thinking that the result is going to be something like, I don't know, so something less, something more interesting than 99.9% Polish.
I've been meaning to that myself, yeah.
But that's what it came out as. So that's, I guess, what I am. But I've never lived there. I can speak it fluently.
Oh, wow.
So I can speak two languages. My Arabic's not very good, though. So that's a bit sad, unfortunately. How about you?
I am English, and yeah, that's it. I haven't done the 23andMe thing yet. I've been meaning to, but this is a small island, so you never know what the results are going to come back with. I'd like there to be something epic in there, like
Something fun, yeah. You know, so you could be like, yeah, I'm a little bit this, and then start researching their whatever the choices is, heritage and stuff. Yeah, for sure.
There's a stat on us descending from Genghis Khan or something out there somewhere. I can't remember what it is, but it's something like that. We're all descended one. I don't know what it is. I'd have to look.
I remember hearing it. Yeah.
So, what's your background in tech, and where does your coding journey begin?
So my coding journey began, I actually wasn't really aware of software development as a career choice. None of my friends really went down that route. So I went to university, I studied architecture, but I did that and it's a 7-year course. I did 3 years and I think I was just determined to finish it for some reason, but it just wasn't really what I signed up for. I didn't think it would be as subjective as it was. I thought it would be more like engineering, because I was going to either do engineering or architecture, but I chose architecture and I really regret it. I think that sort of took me on a detour to where I am today. I think if I did engineering, I would have more likely been a software developer quicker. But I did the 3 years in 3 years to get a bachelor's degree in architecture, and then quickly ditched it and went into becoming a financial broker. So worked in finance as a derivatives broker in Singapore, and then moved to London. And it was actually then that I sort of discovered my love for software engineering. I started my own business, which was just a simple one on a website, sort of like the Wix and Weeblies that we see today. However, it was not as developed. It was just really bad. Like, I made a website and it just didn't look how I wanted it to look. So then I started messing around the HTML and the CSS. And I was like, what is this? This is so much fun. How do I learn more? How do I, you know, get to that next extra level? I started looking at JavaScript. And that was really it. That was when I decided I was really into this. And, you know, in my spare time would just create little projects and eventually quit my job to do a boot camp. And the rest is history.
Ah, so did you learn HTML and CSS as a byproduct of learning JavaScript? Or did you go HTML, CSS, then JavaScript?
Yeah, it was definitely HTML, CSS, and then JavaScript. I think that's probably how most people would go into it. It just seems like a natural progression. Are you finding the same thing?
Yeah, I think you need to have those foundations, because if you don't, you've got a lot more information to digest and understand what you're learning. So if you start off at JavaScript and work backwards, I think you're going to hinder yourself a bit if you don't have the basics down.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with you.
So you mentioned the bootcamp. How did that bootcamp experience shape the one you built on YouTube?
So the bootcamp experience that I had, it was an immersive course of 3 months. And like I said, I don't want to bash bootcamps. I did learn a lot, but because I didn't really know how I would get into software engineering otherwise, and they were pretty much, I think, marketed all over the tubes and everywhere in London, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to do this. For those of you who perhaps can't afford a bootcamp because they are expensive, there are so many alternatives online to actually physically going to one now. For example, I know I work part-time at Free CodeCamp, so it might seem like I'm, you know, like I'm a bit biased, but I just love their free courses that they do on there about web development, where they teach you the HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and then you can move on to learn things like React, because that's exactly what I did in my bootcamp. Again, it was those three, React, and then looking at Node.js, Express. We did a project using Python, a project using Django databases. So that was the progression there, and you can obviously replicate it. The one thing that I will say about bootcamps that I really enjoyed is you've got that camaraderie of, you know, we're all in it together, and if something's hard, you've always got someone to ask, like the instructor, whereas online, obviously, that's a lot harder to do sometimes.
So would you take anything from the experience there and say you applied it to your own bootcamp on YouTube?
Yeah, sorry, that was the original question.
It's all right.
I would say yes. In my bootcamp, my 12-hour bootcamp, instead of just teaching something, instead of being like, do this and do that, I really try to get people to, you know, instead of just following along to a tutorial, think about what they're doing. So I do a lot of pauses where I'm like, okay, now how would you do this? Which is maybe a little bit less common for tutorials on YouTube. I feel like some of them, and I'm guilty of it too, it's just like, just follow along to my coding. Whereas I really try to make it interactive. I create little code pens for everyone for each section, so people can refer to the little code pen. And when we're doing an exercise, they can try figure it out themselves before I show them the answer. So that is something that I definitely took away from the bootcamp that I did and tried to incorporate in my YouTube tutorial.
Well, I think that's a great way to approach it, because it definitely works for me as a learner. And you mentioned Free CodeCamp there. I mean, that's a great place to start. As you mentioned, they have so many resources. And if you look at someone like Danny Thompson, for example, that was where he started, and now he works for Google. So it's a great place to start if you have a passion for it.
Yes, 100%. There's so many people. I think they have some testimonials on their site too, so you can go check it out. And you'll see so many familiar faces. They've really done an amazing job at creating a great course. I don't know if it's called a course, let's just call it a course, a great course that a lot of people are definitely endorsing.
So when you decided to quit the rat race, that alliteration was hard for me there. I don't know why.
The rat race.
Yeah. And focus on your YouTube, channel. What went into making that decision? And did you have any concerns?
That was actually a big moment in my life. At the time, I was working for Eurostar, and everyone knew that I was making the YouTube channel. They were really supportive. The whole team were. And it just came to a point where I was just, I guess, to be blunt, financially making more money from the YouTube channel. And I was like, I enjoyed it more. Don't hate me, Eurostar. I loved Eurostar, but I was enjoying it more. I was enjoying making little projects by myself. So it just seemed like a natural step. But for ages, I was trying to do both, which was really bad. I definitely burnt out because I was, you know, working from 9 till 6 p.m. Monday to Friday at Eurostar, and then the evenings creating courses or making videos. And it was just not really sustainable. So I think one day when I just told my boss, I was like, look, I think I'm going to just focus on the YouTube channel thing. He was like, I totally get it. Like, you're killing it. Like, please, what you're doing is amazing. If you ever want to come back, please come back, and all that. So they were just amazing about it, which made the whole thing a lot easier and a lot less scary. Because I think quitting your job to do something which at the time wasn't super stable. I was just, you know, like, oh, I'm making money from this. This is great. But I didn't really see it as a career. Now I do. Now I've sort of forged it more into a career option. Then yeah, it was 100% daunting.
Well, the numbers don't lie. I mean, I've got them here. correct me if I'm wrong, but in just over a year, you've amassed more than 150,000 subscribers with a combined number of nearly 5 million views on YouTube, which is an incredible achievement.
So I actually set up a YouTube channel at the beginning of lockdown in England. So that's a lie. I started it maybe 2 months before, but I didn't really post anything. I think I posted one video. So when lockdown came around and I was put on furlough, because as I just mentioned, I was working for a company that did trains. So obviously there was nothing happening. So yeah, that's when I started to post videos, I think every week. I try to do them every week. And since then, today, I think I just reached 175,000.
That's an incredible achievement. Congratulations.
I mean, yes, it's definitely, I mean, I'm so grateful to everyone that's been so super supportive. I couldn't have done it without the encouragement of people like yourself and, of course, everyone else that we know on the Twitter community that we engage with. So, yeah, it's been incredible. I'm really grateful.
I really like how you respond to when someone follows a tutorial and then messages you on Twitter to say, look, I finished it. And you have so much support for that person. It's great. I love to see that.
Oh. Yeah, thank you so much. I honestly am so happy whenever I get tweets like that. So it's like it comes from, it's genuine.
I like people taking their own take on it as well. I mean, you give them a platform to start and then they just go off and do their own thing with it. It's great.
I never really like to focus that much on the styling and CSS, just purely because I do think that's where someone's personality shines more. So giving someone the bare bones of a project and being like, okay, no, you go style it, add levels. That is something that I really, I think is really important as well.
I've completed Tic-Tac-Toe, a Pac-Man, and the Trivia app. And the 12-hour video, the bootcamp video, I'm still going through that. That's a long 12 hours to commit to in one bolt.
So.
But yeah, I do recommend it for anyone who is thinking, where do I begin? That's a great place to begin. Go and watch Anya's 12-hour bootcamp. Not in one go, you don't have to do it in one go, but go and watch it because it breaks down all the concepts that you need to learn in a really easy and colorful way. I like the way you use colors to highlight things. That's another nice touch that I think people would really like as well.
I appreciate the shout out.
It's become commonplace on Twitter to see people list an ideal pathway into tech. How would you map out your own learning if you could start again?
If I could start again, I think I've sort of touched on this. I would definitely say, you don't have to go down the bootcamp route if you can't afford it. I would hate to see someone, fork out loads of money and then really struggle, because there are other alternatives. Bootcamps, like I said, do make it easier, but it's not your only option. So I would stress that to anyone starting. The second thing I would say is JavaScript. No matter what anyone says, the first time you see it is probably going to be really daunting and difficult.
I cried a few times.
Yeah, I think there's a bad habit sometimes of people who have already learned JavaScript to be like, oh yeah, it's easy, don't worry, it'll be fine. It's not. Like, I was like, what is this? This is not what I expected it to be. I thought it would be like maths, or I thought this, and it was just not. It was like learning a completely different language. Like, that's what I always compare it to. Like learning a language, like learning how to speak another language, right? Because you just have to train your brain to think a little bit differently. But once you do get it, it is like riding a bike, and then you'll just sort of improve on your knowledge in that area. And I promise everyone will get there at some point, but it is difficult. So that's what I would tell people. I would also focus on building your own projects. So I know, obviously, like I mentioned before, the following along tutorials is important, but always try to, take something and try hack it a little bit. Try to be like, right, now I want to add this, and try put two projects together and see how that goes. Really sort of have fun with it and really build stuff that you enjoy and perhaps that you need, right? If you have a problem, try to solve it by building a dashboard. If you want to manage your social media better, try messing around with APIs and see if you can build your own dashboard. Try getting if you have like Revolut or Monzo, try using their API to make payments from a dashboard. Like, all this stuff is possible. And I think until you start like messing around with it, building real life use cases for stuff that you could use, then you just want to build that passion for it. So yeah, those are things that I would recommend to people starting out.
I would definitely agree with that. I felt like at one point I hit a wall with CSS and I couldn't go any further, but then I started doing repetition in JavaScript, and now I can have an idea of what I want my functions to be and then make them happen, and it works. So most of the time it works.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Earlier this year I actually started this it's Florin Pop and Brad Traversy. They have a 50 JS challenges project thing going on.
Yes.
So I've been doing that for repetition. And then one day I went on my own devices and built, as I mentioned, this little, it's nothing pretty. It's disgusting. It's an ugly thing, but it works. And that's fine. It's doing exactly what I wanted it to do. I had this like massive nav bar that clicks. Then it brings down a box, which is a menu, basically. And then you can select a link, which takes you to a div. And then that div has a back to top button, which is, I could do it with CSS with just the hashtag, but I did it with JavaScript. I mean,
amazing.
And it worked. So I thought, yeah, this is great. I've done this. I understand what a const is. I understand how to make this a function. So yeah, I feel like I'm making progress.
Incredible. Yes. And I've seen the project that they did. All the projects in there look incredible, like really fun, sort of concise, small little things that you can really get your teeth into and feel like you've completed.
Absolutely. If anything, my least favorite one is the drawing one, though. There's a basic canvas app, which is really fun to build, but I didn't have any interest in building that. It's just
So you build a canvas like paint or something?
Yeah. You select the stroke size and the color, then you just make squiggles and drawings and so on. But that one wasn't, I didn't enjoy that one as much, but hey ho.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
It's really good to build. I recommend it, but just as a topic, I didn't have any interest in it.
Yeah, as a topic, yeah. It wasn't for you.
So when you come to build a video tutorial, what's the reality of putting that together? Because people will only see the final end product, but what's the reality of putting that together?
Yes, so this is a topic question I actually get asked quite a lot. So, and I think a lot of people are genuinely interested because I encourage everyone to create content, by the way. I think it's so important to learning as well. So even if it's just writing blogs or creating podcasts, by talking about something, by talking about software development, because as a developer, unless you're doing this, you hardly talk about code. You can do the coding and you perhaps listen to tutorials on coding, but unless you start talking about coding in a technical way, then you know you sort of lose that learning, like you lose the ability to explain something to someone else, because by explaining something to someone else you're actually sort of reinforcing what you know as well. So to create a video, I usually start off with thinking of a fun project, which actually can take quite a while. Luckily, now that my channel's bigger, I have a lot of people. When I do a premiere on YouTube, I usually ask, like, hey, what kind of projects do you like to see? And then that is a nice insight into what my audience likes. So I really appreciate that. So the ideation comes first. Second, I decide if I'm going to build it in JavaScript or React. Usually that depends on the project, and then I get to building. Before I build, I used to plan more, I think. I used to be like, right, I'm going to do this first, and then this, and then this. I think it's a good habit to get into breaking down things into little tasks, because that's how it works when you start working at a company. Obviously, you have like a massive app that you're working on, and you break things off into little tasks, and then each developer does a little tasks, and it all comes together, right? So I think that's a good habit to get into with anything. And then once you have a clear plan and sort of the tasks that you want to complete in order to build your project, you start building. Now, as I said, I don't do that so much anymore. I think I just sort of get into building. And then once I finish my project, I usually, you know, look it over just to make sure I haven't made any silly mistakes, and then I get to filming it. Now, the filming actually takes the least amount of time. It's the editing that takes the longest.
Yeah.
The editing takes the longest, and I don't know why. I'm always like, why is it taking me so long to edit this video? But I think I'm just a sucker for making it as perfect as possible in terms of like transitions and all this, and just making sure that it flows quite nicely. So I would say like even like a half an hour video can take me like 4 hours to edit, which is crazy, right? You're like, how?
Yeah.
But somehow it just does.
What's the most common request? I always struggle with this word, request. I don't know why. I can't get my tongue around it. Request. What's the most commonly requested game that you build that you haven't done yet?
Oh, tanks, which I do remember. I have a vague memory of being Tanks or Bomberman.
Oh.
I think they're quite similar. They're sort of like grid-based games from what I remember. So those two. And apart from that, there's ones that I wouldn't even know where to start making, like Counter-Strike games and stuff like that. Any sort of shooting games. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Maybe one day I'll have a go at it, but I'm not sure how that will go down. And, you know, JavaScript and React, I'm pretty sure these are games that are much more suited for stuff like Unity. But hey, like, it could be fun to try and make. I don't know if you know about JS13K games. I was recently a judge on those, and I did see some shooting games.
Oh.
So it's obviously possible.
Yeah.
So perhaps I could make those. What game do you think I should make next?
Well, I think, okay, there's a cult game called E.T., which is notorious for being the worst game ever built. I think you should build it and make it better.
Oh, I think I know. Was it I think I watched a Netflix documentary on this and it was like really rushed and it was just such a big flop.
I think they had one guy on it who was like doing it 24 hours a day until it was released like in 6 weeks or something.
Yes, I remember that. Oh my God, maybe I should just as a joke.
I think it would be amazing because it's got a cult following now. It's infamous. They buried all the cartridges in a landfill and then people went excavating it like it was an archaeological find. Yeah.
That's hilarious. That would be so fun. Maybe I will try it out. I mean, have to see.
It's I think I could do that. do you have any plans to build any 3D games?
At the moment, not really. Again, I'm not sure. I think with my games, my main aim, which I guess is sometimes easy for myself to forget, I want to teach people how to code JavaScript and React. And the reason I make games is because I think you just learn so much more by building games. I always say, like, imagine your two tutorials. One's like, learn JavaScript and make this website. And the other one's learn JavaScript and make a game of Snake. Now, the website, there is JavaScript going on. But realistically, there's not that much. There'll be like a button. Do you know what I mean? There's very limited JavaScript there. You're still learning JavaScript, but you're not really pushing yourself. Whereas so you can write one function that, you know, if you click this button, the button goes, you get taken to this page. So function does one thing or maybe two things, like it goes to this page and the button turns orange or whatever. Okay. You can do that in CSS even if you wish, but you could do it in JavaScript. Whereas in Snake, one function, for example, if the snake head eats an apple, so many things will happen, right? The snake will grow in length, the snake will speed up, the apple will disappear, the apple will appear somewhere else, then the snake will carry on moving. So that is so much more happening in a function. There's array work. There's so much going on there. So the potential in learning JavaScript by creating games is just, for me, just so much higher. So I think I've always wanted to create games because I just saw the potential of learning in them. So whilst making 3D games does actually sound quite fun, and perhaps I should do it because that is quite cool, I don't want to lose track of what's important to me and my channel, which is the teaching JavaScript part. So I wonder if there is a way to do a 3D game but still focus on the learning aspect. I'm going to have to look into that one.
The reason I asked that question, because I was kind of hoping you would, because I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you heard of FreeJS?
Yes, I have, actually. I haven't had a play around with it.
There's some amazing games out there with that. And I want to build a maze that has a metal ball and it just goes around like a wooden grid and then falls into the middle when you finish the game. And then I want to have generated different maps for different people
really
to use.
Cool.
But yeah, that's a bit later on.
Generated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's just a bit later in the line for me at the moment. I'm really focused on just getting the fundamentals of JavaScript down. But you have inspired me with something on my portfolio. I haven't built it yet, but I had this idea today.
Yes.
I look at footers, and footers are quite boring. Mm-hmm. Normally they just house like links and so on. But I want to put a button in there, like a Mario 1-Up coin button or something like that, where you have a little 8-bit me that runs across the screen, collects a few coins, then you hit the button, and then the button takes you back to the top.
Oh my God, that is so fun! Yes, you have to build that.
That's what I want to do. I don't want people to get to the bottom of my portfolio and go, oh, is that it now? Okay. I want it to have that bit of interactivity, yeah. And I think...
That is brilliant.
Yeah, that's the plan, I had that idea today.
Yes, no, I'm so all about you doing this.
That's the plan.
Maybe you could use Kaboom.js. They have a lot of that sort of stuff built in as well, especially with the generating of little pixelated. Oh no, you have to use the Replit environment for that. But the jump functions and all that, that's sort of already in their text. So yeah, you should check it out. It's the one that you used for Mario.
Kaboom, you say? Yeah, I will check that
Kaboom
one out.
Kaboom.js.
It's time to wrap this episode up, and that brings me to my final question of the show. Can you give us a hint about any upcoming games you're working on at the moment?
So currently, I'm actually working on a word association game, which is quite a cool game because it utilizes an API. I've been doing quite a lot of API work recently, and we build the game in React, and then also, as a part two, I show you how to store your variables secretly and build out a Node.js and Express backend for that. So it's a two-parter, which I'm really excited about. And then perhaps later on, I'm going to go back to do some JavaScript games. Again, I'm going to have to need some inspiration. So yes, if you think of any games, anyone out there listening, please do come on my channel the next time I'm doing a premiere and just drop it in and let me know.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Anya. You can find out more by clicking on the links in the description. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute honor.
That's going to do it for this time. See you again next week for more Code Words.
Enjoyed this episode? Don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Code Words. See tech differently.